This is the Advanced Selling Podcast. The aim of this podcast is to help business sales teams grow their business with modern strategies and philosophies. Now, your hosts, Bill Caskey and Brian Neal.
Welcome back to the Advanced Selling Podcast. I've got a very special guest today, someone whose work I've followed over the years. Mr. Marshall Goldsmith is our guest. Mr. Goldsmith, welcome to the Advanced Selling Podcast.
Thank you very much.
You've written many books, and most of your books, as I remember them, are about leadership and management, a lot of behavioral-focused book, basically not just how to think about being a better leader, but what to do and what to stop doing, the habits of leadership. And you recently come out with a book published either late last year or early this year called What Got You Here Won't Get You There in Sales. And you'd written the first of the series basically as a leadership book, but when you added the words in sales, it really got our attention because a lot of our listeners are salespeople or sales managers. So I'd like to talk with you a little bit about that today. And by the way, we're speaking with Marshall Goldsmith, who you can find out a lot more about and purchase products from at marshallgoldsmith.com. And anybody that we have on, we always recommend that they purchase the book, and I fully endorse this because it's a great read. Tell us a little bit about what prompted you to write it for salespeople and sales teams, given the fact you've done most of your work in the leadership area.
Well, I'll go backward one step and talk about why I wrote it in the first book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Peter Drucker said we spend a lot of time helping leaders learn what to do. We do not spend enough time helping leaders learn what to stop. He said half the leaders I meet, they don't need to learn what to do. They need to learn what to stop. Well, that led to the book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. That book is mostly for leaders in organizations. Then my friends Bill Hawkins and Don Brown came up with the idea of, why don't we take that same logic and apply it not just to leaders but to salespeople? And that's what led to the book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There in Sales.
Excellent. And so I'm assuming that you were able to take a lot of those, just the idea of development, because you have coached and coached people, coached leaders, and it's really not all that different. It's just a little bit slightly different discipline, but you've been able to use a lot of that leadership perspective, I would assume, in this book.
Oh, yes. And as we go through just a couple of the things that what not to do, I'll talk about for leaders. We're going to talk about how these apply for salespeople as well, because interpersonal relationships are interpersonal relationships, and both selling and leadership involve interpersonal relationships.
Mm-hmm. So as I read through your research, and I'm sure that when you write a book like this, you really get into the research and study it and get feedback. Was there anything that really surprised you about sales today that maybe before you started the research on this, you weren't really aware of or didn't really know?
Well, I think it's the parallel between something else Peter Drucker said. The leader of the past knew how to tell, the leader of the future knows how to ask. And if you look at sales, most leaders today manage knowledge workers. A knowledge worker is someone who knows more about what they're doing than you as their leader do. Well, salespeople sell to knowledge workers. And the salesperson of the future has got to ask and listen and learn. They just can't walk in typically and tell people what to do or tell people what to buy. They have to learn from their clients because they're dealing with very smart people and often involved in very complex sales.
Mm-hmm. And so as you looked at that, I'm sure that you have some real opinions about what the salesperson of the future needs to act like, be like, think like, look like. And answer that, and then we'll get into some of the habits and some of the stop doing and start doing. But what's your sense of the salesperson of the future, say out 3 to 5 years? How will they have to change?
Well, I think it's very parallel to the leader of the future. They're going to have to ask, they have to listen, they're going to have to constantly learn. The old idea that any salesperson could sell anything and, you know, you could kind of just be good at transitioning from one form of sales to the other, that's pretty much gone.
It is, yeah.
Salespeople in the future, they're going to have to learn constantly about the customers, about the products, about the changing world, about new technology, how to use new technology, social media. And the learning curve is getting steeper and steeper and steeper. So I think basically the new salesperson of the future is a person who's a constant lifetime learner.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I watched some of the TED talks the other night, and there was a lady there that talked about introverts versus extroverts. I can't recall her name, but she talked about how so few salespeople are introverts. Most of them are extroverts, naturally, and we would assume that. But the problem with that is that sometimes extroverts aren't very curious, and they're not willing to listen sometimes, and that's exactly what you're talking about.
And sometimes they talk too much.
Yeah, that's right. I want to go to the book if we can.
Sure.
you say in the kind of the first chapter, the setting the stage, you say that the state of the moment is being present is something that a lot of people really miss. Tell us a little bit about what you mean by being present. In this case, a salesperson being present, not physically, but mentally with a prospect.
Well, you know, oftentimes we just get so busy that we're not there when we're there. I'm a Buddhist, and the idea of being present is a very Buddhist concept, being where you are when you're there. And, you know, it definitely applies with sales, with clients. It's very easy to get on autopilot. We do so many things, so many emails and voicemails. And by the way, I'm going to get off topic a second. It's not just at work, it's at home. I've had a lot of people get in the habit of asking their children, what could I do to be a better father or mother? Number one answer is don't use your BlackBerry around me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so easy to get on this autopilot where we're sort of there, but we're not really there. Well, you know, one thing we talk about in our book is in sales, that doesn't work. Very important for the client to know that you are present, you are there, you're listening, and you're not someone who's pretending to want to be there, mm-hmm. but really wants to be someplace else.
Yeah, that's good. And kind of right along with that, you talk a little bit about, you cite research from the University of Michigan that talked about some studies since 1979. They polled over 14,000 college students, and I'll let you describe what they found in that polling.
Well, this is 72 studies combined since 1979, 14,000 students, and they said that young adults are 40% less empathetic than they were in 1979, and less likely to describe themselves as being concerned about feelings for others. So what has happened is empathy is down. This is not a theory. This is a pretty well-documented statistical fact. And narcissism is up. And that leads to too much me. I mean, not enough them, too much me. The thing I learned in my job as a coach is the major variable for successful coaching is not the coach, it's the client. It's the client who's great and works hard. The client I coached I spent the least amount of time with improved the most. And his name is Alan Mulally, the CEO of Ford. And I said, what should I learn about coaching from you? He said, don't make a coaching process about yourself, your own ego, how smart you are. Make it about your clients, how great they are, and how hard they work.
Yeah.
Well, that's such a great lesson for salespeople. We can get lost in ourselves. And then, you know, and then we forget that we're not here for ourselves. We're here for other people. And the essence of empathy is not me. The essence of empathy is being focused on that other person, which is critically important in sales. So I think that research paints a pretty clear picture.
It does, clear but scary.
Right.
You know, we do some telephone coaching for our clients, and occasionally we'll be on the phone when they're on the phone talking to prospects. And it's amazing to us how often people will just flat out not hear. The client is, or the prospect sometimes is literally telling them how to sell them or saying, look, I'd love to talk with you. They're worrying about their next question or the answer before, and that's an example of just not being present and not being empathetic to the point where they really, sometimes it just seems like they don't care. I know that's not true, but it just appears that way.
Well, basically, they care about something. What they care about is following a script as opposed to care about the person they're talking to.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to the habits here. There's 16 in this book. Once again, we're talking with Marshall Goldsmith, author, co-author with Don Brown and Bill Hawkins of a book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. In sales, you can find out more at marshallgoldsmith.com. You have 16 habits. Obviously, we don't have time to go through all 16, but we're going to pick two or three here. And
sure.
Habit number three is selling past the close. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, that's a takeoff on something I talked about in the other book called Adding Too Much Value. You know, I'm young, smart, enthusiastic. You're my boss. I come to you with an idea. Rather than just saying great idea, our natural tendency is to say, that's a nice idea. Why don't you add this to it? Well, what happens is the quality of the idea may go up 5%. My commitment to executing the idea may go down 50%.
Yeah.
Well, the same thing's true in sales. The client needs to commit, not you as the salesperson. And what happens is when the client wants to do X, we don't have to add value. We don't have to prove anything. The key is to really focus on what are they committed to have to be happening, and their commitment is the key to our success. And when we talk too much, we start focusing on our wisdom as opposed to their mm-hmm. commitment, and we can actually start damaging their commitment in an effort to make a point.
That's awesome. That's great. We see that so often. And sometimes just shutting up and shaking your head and nodding, and it's not about a silent technique. It's just about letting it be, you know. It's just letting it be in the room. Habit number six, curb qualifying.
Well, I think this is an important one because we all have a tendency to stereotype people. And sometimes we have a tendency to stereotype too much. In the book, we talk about a funny example from the movie Pretty Woman, where a woman comes in and, you know, they just look at her and say she doesn't have the money to buy anything. And obviously in the movie, they're wrong. Well, we do this all the time because what happens is we pick up a few cues as to the person or who they are, and then all of a sudden we start guessing. And then all of a sudden, sometimes the stereotype we have about that other person is not correct. And then when we miss that stereotype, we really can, you know, not effectively deal with the other person. I'll give you a personal example. I fortunately didn't say anything, and I was very wrong. There's a great leader in the pharmaceutical world named Fred Hassan. Fred was the CEO of Schering Plough and CEO of Pharmacia, one of the most successful executives in the pharmaceutical world history. And he's a turnaround guy. And before I met him, I had this stereotype of him as being some blustery guy pounding on the table and all that. Well, when I met him, he turned out to be just the nicest, soft-spoken, quiet guy. He'd read my book in advance, bought it himself at the bookstore, was incredibly nice and polite and great listener, and very different than this sort of somewhat negative stereotype I had in my mind. And I learned something. Don't stereotype people by their job description. Don't stereotype people by what you think they've been doing. Mm-hmm. You know, really take the time and energy to find out who they are, because sometimes our stereotypes are just totally off the mark. And if we deal with those stereotypes, then we can make a fool of ourselves.
Yeah.
The only good thing is at least I didn't treat him that way, thank God, because that would have been a total mistake. That was the totally opposite of who he is.
How many times have you been introduced to someone and say, Marshall, you ought to meet Bob, but I got to warn you about Bob. He can be a real jerk. And you meet Bob, he's like, no, he's not. What have you done to him to make him feel like you think he's a jerk? He's a great
guy. That's right.
He
may be a real jerk around you. You deserve it.
That's your problem.
Maybe the problem isn't Bob. Maybe it's you.
Now that I think of it, you need coaching.
Exactly. Right.
Okay, let's go to habit number 8 here. Once again, Marshall Goldsmith, we're going through the 16 habits of salespeople, bad habits. Habit number 8, one-upping.
Well, that goes back to that great disease of having to tell the world how smart we really are. I mean, remember when you were a kid, mommy and daddy saying, when I was a little boy, when I was a little girl,
mm-hmm.
and they went into excruciating details and regaled us with, you know, how heroic they were in their martyrish ways. Well, when you were a kid, were you impressed? No. As a parent, how many of us have done the same idiotic thing?
All the time.
All the time. And your kids care. They give you this blank look like, shut up. Who cares what happened when you were a little boy? You know, did they have cars? I doubt it. Well, when I was growing up, I swore I'd never do this. I must have done it hundreds of times. One of the worst things we can do in sales is prove we're better than our clients.
Yeah,
let's prove they're wrong. Let's prove that we're smarter than them or better than them, and they have ideas, and all of a sudden we kick into this competitive desire to win.
Yeah.
At the expense of logic or common sense. A case study I use in the other book is, you want to go to dinner at restaurant X, your wife wants to go to dinner at restaurant Y. You have a heated argument, go to restaurant Y. The food was not your choice and the service was awful. Option A, critique the food. Point out your wife was wrong and this mistake could have been avoided if she listened to me. Option B, shut up, eat the stupid food, try to enjoy it and have a nice evening.
Live to fight tomorrow.
Exactly. What would I do? What should I do? Almost every one of my clients, what would I do? Critique the food. What should I do? Shut up. I'm going to give you an even bigger example. I was teaching at Dartmouth, and I gave this example. I said, okay, you have a hard day at work. You come home. Your husband, wife, his partner is there, and you're in a foul mood, and the other person says, I had such a hard day today, I had such a tough day. And we reply, you had a hard day. Do you have any idea what I had to put up? We have to prove we're more miserable than the people we live with.
It's real competitive.
Oh, yeah. I gave this example at Dartmouth. The guy in the back, he raised his hand. He said, I did that last week. I asked him, what happened? He said, my wife looked at me. She said, honey, you just think you had a hard day. It's not over.
You know, I hear a lot of times salespeople in our training will refer to the prospect and say, you know, they just don't get it.
Right.
And that is a pet peeve of mine, because I don't, you know, a lot of us don't get a lot of things. But to me, the role of the sales professional is to help them, whatever get it means, to help them understand, to help them enlighten themselves and expand their thinking. And whenever I hear someone say they don't get it, to me, that's a big judgment call. That's really kind of what you're talking about here.
Well, Peter Drucker taught me a great lesson that relates to sales. every decision in the world is made by the person who has the power to make the decision. Make peace with that.
Mm-hmm.
Not the best person, or the smartest person, or the right person, or a fair person, or a good person. Every person is, that's the decision maker, is the decision maker. And if you need to influence any decision maker, by the way, this doesn't just apply in sales with clients. It could be internal sales or influencing internal people, influencing your boss. Anytime you need to influence that other person, and you know what? They don't have to buy. It's your job to sell. It's not their job to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to accept the fact decision makers are decision makers. They may not be rational, but they're still the customer.
Yeah.
They're still the decision maker. And you don't sell to what you need. You sell to what they need.
Yeah. Yeah. Last question before we wrap up here, and I really do appreciate you spending time with us on the Advanced Selling Podcast. Later in the book, you talk a little bit about the technical salesperson, the engineer who maybe was a great engineer, and now all of a sudden he's got customer responsibility and how difficult that is. We have a program called the Accidental Salesperson. That's exactly right. What it is. In fact, I'd say probably 75% of our training business now is with that person. It's not with the frontline sales staff.
Right.
Tell me what you have noticed in your research and in the writing of the book, and you talk about how sometimes people have been drafted into sales, which I really like the way that.
Right.
Tell me more about, see this as a trend, or is it going to be, are we eventually going to get back to salespeople again?
Well, you know, I don't know whether they're in sales. Sometimes they're drafted into sales, but sometimes they're just drafted into the sales process.
Right, right.
Because they know so much technically, the salesperson does need the engineer to be there. And once they're there interfacing with the customer, you know what? They're part of the sales team.
That's right.
Like it or not, they're part of the sales team. One of the biggest challenges I see with engineers is something I call lost in logic. They just are so trained that if you provide a logical answer, you're going to win, that they get lost in this idea that everything's going to be logical and rational, and that they're more logical and more rational than the customer, then the customer will look up at them and say, oh, thank you for being logical and rational. I really appreciate your input. As opposed to realizing the customer doesn't have to be logical or rational. The customer is the customer.
Mm-hmm.
And just make peace with that. I mean, have you ever said to yourself, I'm amazed that someone at that level, followed by his weird, crazy, does dumb things? I bet in your life you said this.
Sure, sure.
I want to point out how crazy that is. Have you ever read a history book in your life?
Mm-hmm.
In the history of the world, have most people at those exalted levels of status, money, and power been women or men?
Men.
Younger or older?
Older.
Is there anything in the history of the world that would lead you to believe when you take old men, you give them a lot of status, money, and power? They begin to act incredibly sane and rational. Did you read that book?
That's true.
Don't think you read that book,
no,
did you?
No, it's true.
There is no book. Well, decisions aren't made based on rationality, logic, or even sanity. Decisions are made by decision makers. Once you make peace with that, you're going to be better at sales.
Yeah.
You're going to be better at influencing people. But one final comment, you're going to have a happier rest of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Marshall, I really appreciate you taking time out of your crazy schedule to be on with us today. It's been a joy and a pleasure, and I wish you luck in the future and also on this book, and we'd love to have you back sometime. Thanks again.
Thank you very much. I had a great time talking with you.
Okay, bye-bye.
This has been the Advanced Selling Podcast, presented by Caskey Achievement Strategies, Indianapolis. Join us each time we record a new podcast by going to iTunes.